Ida B. Wells was born into slavery in 1862 in Holly Springs, Mississippi. She grew up during Reconstruction and later became a journalist, suffragist, and anti-lynching crusader. She was awarded a posthumous Pulitzer Prize special citation in 2020 for her reporting on the violence against African Americans during the era of lynching. Michelle Duster shares several amazing stories about her great-grandmother's life in her new book, Ida B. the Queen, The Extraordinary Life and Legacy of Ida B. Wells. Duster is the keynote speaker for the National Federation of Press Women's 2021 conference. The virtual event, hosted by Arkansas Press Women, begins Friday, June 11th. She's joining me now via Zoom from Chicago. Michelle Duster, thank you so much for joining us and discussing your new book with us. It was such a lovely retrospective of a family member that was such an important part of your life, even though you never got to meet her. She was someone who, which just seems like she was ever present in your life, but can you tell me what one of your earliest memories of learning about her was? What was one of the first things that you remember, or do you ever remember not knowing about her?
I don't remember not knowing about her. In my family, she was presented to me the same way that all of my other relatives were. I actually come from sort of a large family between both my mother and father's side of the family. So it was just like, okay, well, this is your grandmother. This is your great-grandmother was your grandmother's mother. And I mean, when I was little, I think this is normal when you're a kid. I mean, people talk to you in ways that you can comprehend. When I was just say 6, 7, 8 years old, you know, I was like, well, your great-grandmother was a writer. She wrote about things that were happening in her world, and she was fighting for justice. I mean, it was, you know, really simplified down so that I, as a 7 or 8 year old, could understand. I mean, it's funny because my mom was one of those parents that kept papers and our little artwork and that kind of thing. And I actually have one of the papers that I wrote in third grade. about Ida, and you know, so I can kind of get a sense of like where my mind was when I was 8 years old. And basically I was like, oh, I want to fight for justice the way my great grandmother did. She was really important, you know. So that's kind of how I comprehended it. I knew she was famous. I didn't necessarily recognize the extent. The main thing is that I didn't recognize this extent of the danger that she faced, and the violence, the violent nature of the country that she was fighting against. I didn't comprehend that level until I was older.
Do you have a particular moment that you remember when it struck you, sort of the significance of her life, and like you said, the violence that she was facing in that time period?
It was definitely when I was in my 20s. And I think what happened when I look back on it is that, you know, she had the train incident with the Chesapeake, Ohio and Southwestern Railroad, where she was removed from the ladies' car because she refused to go to the colored car. And she ultimately sued the railroad. She won, and then ultimately it was overturned 2.5 years later. And so I think what happened for me was that when I was the same age that she was, when this happened, that's when it hit me how young she was and how brave of an act it was, because I was the same age and I was like, I can't imagine I'm taking on a railroad company when I'm 21 years old, you know? So that's when it kind of hit me. The first time, and I was like, whoa, she was really young. Because, you know, when you're 10, 20 seems old. But when you're 20, 21 doesn't seem old, you know? So that's when it hit me. And then when I was 26, I worked on the first documentary film about Ida B. Wells that was aired on the American Experience series. And when I was working with William Greaves on that film, that was another time when it really hit me the extent of the violence that she was facing, because I was doing photo research. And so I saw thousands of photos of lynchings and met a lot of people who were scholars in this area. And it was also the first time that I had traveled to the South. And so the combination of all of that made it more real. And just standing in those spaces where, like the fields where Ida's friends were killed, as far as I know to this day, has not been developed yet. But at the time in the 1980s when I was there, and I was standing literally in that space, that it was like chilling.
I mean, I got goosebumps just thinking about that and hearing you say that. Thank you for sharing. Much of your life has been preserving that legacy. You mentioned the film, you've written books, you talk about her, part of memorials and things like that. Do you have a favorite story that you enjoy telling about her life?
For me, there are certain things about her that are inspiring, more so than like a story itself. Like for instance, as I've gone on my professional journey, dealing with my own, you know, challenges and the world I am living in, one of the things that inspires me about her is her way that she advocated for herself. There's one incident where she, and I wrote about this in the book. It was a very small incident, but it really resonated with me, where she confronted the pastor who she had heard was making remarks that negatively reflected on her. And she was so diligent about crafting her own, brand as a single woman, but also as a businesswoman. So she confronted him and demanded an apology. And she wrote the apology for him and requested that he give the apology in public. I mean, every time I think about that, it just says so much on so many levels that she was business savvy enough to know that her reputation was very important to make sure that her reputation was really, you know, good. And then as a woman, you know, she refused to be painted in a way that was untrue, that would actually put her life in danger. And so, you know, when you think about that in terms of today, you know, there are things going on right now when it comes to women having to stand up for themselves and make sure that they are treated with respect. And so that resonates with me. The other thing that kind of stands out for me is how she advocated for herself to be paid and to have control over her work. So I mean, how she negotiated to become part owner of the newspaper instead of, if you want to say, just being the editor. She was like, I want to be a partner, a business partner. And then she advocated for herself. She actually pitched the idea to the editors of the Daily Interocean newspaper when she was offered the opportunity to travel to England for the second time. But she was offered to have her travel and expenses paid, but no money. Like, she wasn't going to be paid a salary. So she negotiated with the Daily Interocean to write a column and be paid. And so those are the two things that stand out for me, because I, you know, am on my own journey when it comes to writing and publishing. And I think about how she created opportunities for herself and was very adamant about being treated with respect.
Making those comparisons between your great-grandmother's, her life and what she was dealing with professionally versus what you're dealing with professionally speaks so much to something that I found very unique about this book, was the way in which you wove together the history of her life with contemporary figures who, by the way, are depicted in these beautiful, colorful illustrations. Those were such a nice touch to the book. Why did you approach this project in this way, as opposed to, say, a straightforward biography?
I chose to incorporate contemporary issues and contemporary people into Ida B. the Queen, because first of all, there are several biographies that have already been written about her. And so I wanted to create something different than what's already on the market. I mean, two things that would make it different. Obviously, I'm a descendant of her, so I have sort of the personal way of thinking about her life. And I wanted to help people understand what the experience is, you know, to be related to somebody who's so well known. But then I think it's important for people to understand that the work that my great grandmother did is unfinished. There were people who came before her who influenced her, and then people who've come after her who are continuing on with the work that she did. And she did so many different types of work that I wanted to kind of break it down into different categories, because there are not that many people who are doing everything that she did. And so I wanted to kind of highlight different people who are doing different types of work. So for instance, as far as publishing, taking control of the narrative of African Americans, taking control over our own stories and our own experience and our own perspectives. So I highlighted people like John H. Johnson, who started, you know, Johnson Publishing Company, which created Ebony and Jet and several other publications, you know, and he absolutely did that in order to tell our stories, because we were underrepresented in quote mainstream media. And then, for instance, within politics, you know, she either was a suffragist, and she actually was very involved in advocating for politicians and actually ran for office herself. And so we have people today like Stacey Abrams, who's advocating for voting rights, as well as she had run for governor. And so, you know, there are several different components of what my great grandmother did. And there are people to me who are continuing on the work that she did.
As you mentioned, her work is still unfinished. What do you think Ida would think about how things are in the world today? Many of the issues she was fighting against are still issues right now.
I can only guess what my great grandmother would think, but based on the work that she did, I mean, she fought for justice and equality for African Americans. She was born into slavery, so I mean, there was a long way to go from that to actual equality, and so she fought, you know, in multiple ways for African Americans, basically to have first-class citizenship. I mean, one of the main things she's known for is the work that she did exposing realities when it came to lynching, which was, you know, extrajudicial killing, murder, you know, with the complicity of the state. And in many instances, with the complicity of the press, because there were times when newspapers would advertise or announce, you know, lynchings that were taking place, and like it was an event for people to celebrate and come, you know, witness. And also, you know, train companies were complicit as well, so having extra trains to transport people to watch the lynchings. And so she was exposing all of that. And, you know, today we're dealing with many of the issues that she was, you know, dealing with. We still have, you know, state-sanctioned murder. It's in a sort of different form, but it's still the same effect, where too many times these murders are left unpunished. You know, there's hardly any kind of justice when it comes to the people who are committing these murders, who are, you know, employees of the state. You know, and then obviously we're dealing with the same issues. I mean, you know, inequality with housing, inequality in the schools. And she wrote about these things, you know, inequality in healthcare, you know, access to healthcare. And we have, you know, injustice when it comes to environmental issues, where too many times communities of color have factories and toxic kind of fumes coming out. You know, that's a big issue right here in Chicago, actually. So, I mean, there are just numerous issues that she was dealing with that we're still trying to solve today.
How can her work and her life be used as a model for making an impact in today's society?
Well, one of the things that I included in Ida B. the Queen was a section that I broke down into sort of themes as far as the kind of work that Ida was doing. So for instance, like I said, countering false narratives or taking control of the narrative is one way, you know, dealing with information and images and how African-Americans are portrayed and our perspectives being told in a truthful way. So that's one way that people can work today. You know, she protested alone. And so I highlighted some people today who have taken it upon themselves to solely, you know, have these protests. One of the people I, you know, included was Colin Kaepernick and Muhammad Ali and several others who by themselves, you know, made a statement. And then there's collective action, you know, because she was involved in institution building. I mean, she was one of the founders of the NAACP and the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs. She founded the Alpha Suffrage Club. She founded the Negro Fellowship League. So she was a founder of several different organizations. And that strategy of working collectively can be used today. You know, she spoke truth to power. I mean, she went directly to the source. She visited two sitting presidents in the White House to confront the seat of power directly in order to challenge, you know, some of the social injustice. She also met with two governors of Illinois. I mean, so there are multiple ways that she worked. And my hope with the book is that when the people read that section specifically, that they will be able to say, oh my God, okay, this is a way that I can do things. Because I tried to make it so that people can sort of get ideas, you know, and use the examples from her life as sort of a case study on how things can be done, what they can do.
Your great grandmother passed before you were born, but if you had the chance to speak to her today, what do you think you'd like to talk to her about?
The things I actually would really love to talk to her about are more personal. Like, I really would love to know what she did to relax. You know, because I mean, you know, when you read her life story, it's almost intimidating and overwhelming. And it's like, how in the world did one woman do all of this? And so that's one thing I really would like to know is like, what did she do to relax? I mean, she had to. There's no way humanly possible for there to be no downtime, you know, in order to just rejuvenate yourself and just have, you know, have the continue having the energy to keep going. And so there had to be some strategy that she had to, I mean, I could tell, like, based on what I've read about her, that she was an avid reader. And so, you know, I surmise that she, you know, would read novels in order to escape, you know, to a different place and that kind of thing. So that seemed like one of her strategies. And she obviously was very religious. So maybe she would, you know, have moments in prayer, you know, things like that. But I just really would like to know, how does she like take care of herself?
I would love to know that as well, because she did do quite a bit and was quite a model then and now. Is there anything else you would like to add or anything else you'd like to discuss?
I just hope, you know, when people read Ida B. the Queen, that they can see themselves in her story and be inspired, not only by like, oh, wow, Ida was so great and she was an amazing woman, but be inspired by what they can do and be inspired to feel that their voice is important and they can take action in ways that are comfortable to them that can make an impact in whatever way, you know, they can. I mean, I think sometimes people, when they read Ida's story, they feel like, oh my God, you know, this is just so out of my scope of, you know, what I can do. And so what I'm hoping is that it'll make her story more relatable as far as not feeling overwhelming and not feeling intimidating. And like, you know, there are ways that she worked that resonate and can be used as a model for what, you know, individual people can do. And so that's what I really hope, you know, that people take from it and also see her humanity. That was one thing I was very conscious of incorporating, you know, some of her insecurities, some of her downtimes, feeling frustrated and feeling slightly demoralized. And for me, when, as I have gone through my journey, grappling with, you know, this legacy that I have, for me, I felt the need to understand her as a whole woman and not just a resident. And that's what I am hoping that people will get from it, you know, just the whole woman.
Thank you very much for taking the time to chat about Ida a little bit more today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Antoinette.
Michelle Duster is the great-granddaughter of Ida B. Wells and the author of Ida B. the Queen, The Extraordinary Life and Legacy of Ida B. Wells. The book, published by Simon & Schuster, is available now in hardcover. You can find more information about the author and her work at mldwrites.com.